Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Mike Lanana and Jim Schoenert, I'm John Manuel. We're brought to you by Louisville Slugger every week here on the podcast. Go to at Slugger Nation on Instagram or on Twitter for plenty of great offers. And just to kind of get the vibe of college baseball, you do a nice job on the Instagram, I've noticed, on Slugger Nation from around the ball clubs that use Louisville Slugger bats. And, of course, you can follow us on Instagram, at Baseball America on Instagram, and we're at Baseball America on Twitter. And, guys, interesting week as the way things went this weekend in college baseball as Southeastern Conference play started. And the way those results went, the top of the league remains the top of the league. And not only is it the top of the league, guys, it's the top of our poll. SEC teams at 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. And we haven't been able to crunch all the numbers. There's only one other SEC team in the rest of the rankings, Mississippi State, falling down to 20. But I mean, I think we knew the top of this league was really strong, guys. But I didn't think I don't remember that we've ever had a rankings in all the years I've been here. As you guys are constantly reminded of how old I am, but it's been a long time, and I don't remember one conference having five of the top 16s. Jim, you've tied up a lot of these over your years here too.
Yeah, I mean, I think there have been some years where we might have like three in the top four or something like that. I think there have been years where the Big 12 or the Pac-12's had that, or the ACC. But, I mean, what would I say? We're five of the top six. Yeah, I cannot. That's got to be unprecedented.
I think it is unprecedented, and I think it's also deserved. And, one of the teams that jumps out of this, we've talked a little bit about LSU and these other teams that are at the top, but Texas A&M, guys. Mm-hmm. Watched a little bit of them on the TV this weekend against Auburn. And I don't care who you're playing, 21-0 is 21-0. Mm-hmm. And they're doing this despite a fairly consistent string of injuries where they're not fully healthy. They don't have the team they thought they'd have. And yet they just keep on winning. I mean, if you had to pick out some keys here, Mike and Jim, I mean, what sticks out to you about Texas A&M? How are they winning 21 in a row? Besides the fact their schedule coming into this weekend wasn't the stoutest schedule. I mean, I guess, Jim, you should start. You saw them in Houston. What jumped out to you there, and what's jumped out to you since then?
Well, what jumped out there was the veteranness of their lineup, for one thing. They've got a lot of experience, and obviously a lot of their best players are sophomores as well, guys like Nick Banks and, Ronnie Gideon, too. I mean, he's had a bit of a slow start, but they've got a lot of juniors and seniors, guys that have been around. Got like Mitchell now.
Yeah.
I think that threw me off all last weekend. But anyway, he's a guy who's, getting his chance. He's had a big breakout first quarter of the season anyway. And, I mean, they're pitching at the time. I mean, we'll see. They've lost, you had losing A.J. Minter on top of losing Tyler Stubblefield. So we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, they've got depth. I mean, they bring in who was it that pitched on Sunday? But they've got Matt Kent's had a really good start. Grayson Long's been really good. They've been able to weather it so far. I mean, we'll see what they do in conference play. We've kind of talked about how we've got all these teams up here. You wouldn't expect they're not all going to be national seeds. So I mean, someone's going to end up 16-14 or something like that in the conference. But I mean, that's 21-0. I mean, in sweeping Auburn, I mean, Auburn's not world beaters, but they were playing well, and they've got talent. It's young, but they've got talent. And to sweep them, beating Keegan Thompson on Friday and then, coming from and just kind of just outpacing them the last couple of days, I mean, that was impressive.
Hey, Mike Turner-Larkins is who Jim was trying to think of. They're the freshman, highly regarded freshman. Last year's Texas high school draft class was very poor, record-setting poor by Texas standards. But Turner-Larkins was one of the top arms in the state, and they held on to him. And now you can see how important it is they held on to him. They need pitching depth, and they get it from Larkins. No pressure, second weekend start, go out there in an SEC series and keep us perfect. And he goes out there and he pitched very, very well, seven strikeouts. And it feels like they have a different hero kind of every game, every night. And they have that kind of team where they can win a lot of different ways.
Right. Kind of piggybacking off of what Jim was saying, I thought this weekend was huge for them because it was really, given their schedule so far, it was really their first test.
Right.
Against Auburn, who is a good team, a young team, but still a quality team. And the fact that not having Minter, not having Stubblefield, that they're able to pitch well, that they're able to get a guy like Larkins to come in on Sunday and throw like he did. And Matt Kent had a nice start as well. you know, it's a good sign for this team, and it adds a little legitimacy, or a little more legitimacy, at least, to what they're doing so far this season.
I think it really did. I mean, you guys profiled Auburn in the weekend preview, and Auburn has talent. This is kind of, I guess, the flip side of this is, you know, we're kind of waiting for Auburn to show, are they for real or not? And, you know, they had a tougher non-conference schedule at this point, but, you know, go on the road to open SEC play, and they aren't able to win a game. Now it's time for Texas A&M to go on the road. They'll be at Alabama next weekend.
I mean, it does look like Alabama's starting to play better. I mean, they just went at Mississippi State, so
right.
You kind of figure the streak probably ends this week. But I mean, you know, the way you never know. I mean, they've got a lot of confidence. They're finding ways to pull out these games late. They didn't really have to in this series, but you know, they've had games they've had to pull out late to get a, you know, late home run, or, you know, get, you know, the bullpen gets them out of big jams, or what have you. So You never know how long this might keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to expect any team to keep on winning. Heck, they might lose a Prairie View A&M, you know. But I do think what Texas A&M has shown us is that they're better than we thought they were coming into the year. That's not just schedule. There's a confidence factor there. The thing that it reminds me of what we've seen the last few years out of Kentucky. Feels like Kentucky's gotten out of the gates several times over the last few years, and you kind of wonder about those. The SEC programs aren't the blue blood programs, but A&M's close to that. Obviously, they've been to Omaha in recent iterations, not as a member of the SEC, but a few years back when they had Naquin and Waka. So this is not a program that's new to Omaha. And it's not like Auburn, where Auburn hasn't been to Omaha since 1997 now, one of the longest routes in the SEC. That might even be the longest route now that Ole Miss went last year. I'm trying to think. I think it's Kentucky, because Kentucky hasn't been.
Yeah.
I think outside of Kentucky, though, the longest route of the teams that have been, and have been in the SEC a long time. Mizzou hasn't been in some time. But of those old-school SEC teams, Auburn's drought's up there.
And Alabama's like 1 year later, right?
1999, yeah, okay, two years more recently. So
it is kind of both of them have been that long without it.
It's not coincidental that those are the two states that don't have statewide lottery. That's a state that doesn't have a statewide lottery funding its colleges like Georgia and Florida do, and Louisiana. And that's what those coaches used to complain about all the time, was they don't have statewide lottery money. It's not the same playing field for them as it was for Georgia, Florida, Louisiana. That's what I always heard from Jim Wells for all those years that he was at Alabama. And to his credit, I haven't heard the same thing from the two new the coaching staffs there now. But not the step that Auburn wanted to take. Florida, meanwhile, you know, big win on Friday for Tennessee. You kind of think maybe Tennessee will turn things around. They wind up still losing that series. That's got to be a little bit of a heartbreaker when you beat Logan Shore, and then you can't
do it. Doing
it
the way they did, I mean, just crushing the ball.
What was the stat that he'd given up two home runs his entire career?
He'd given up one his whole career. It was none this year. He gave up one last year, and he gives up three in the first inning. Four in the game.
That's not something that you would predict.
No.
That goes in the hashtag can't predict ball category, no. I think, for baseball. But Texas A&M also the only team in the SEC West that swept this weekend. But LSU did not sweep. They lose a game in extra innings on Saturday to Ole Miss, where Alex Lang turned in.
Funny, you know, Alex Lang was dealing.
If it wasn't the best outing by a pitcher in college baseball this weekend, you know, Trey Killian had 7 no-hit innings for Arkansas. We'll have more about that on the website today at baseballamerica.com. But you talk about, if it wasn't the best, it was one of the best. I mean, Alex Lang was fantastic for LSU. But they still do win the series, guys, and we also saw on Sunday they're starting to peek through a little bit of that offense that we thought LSU would have. For me, Mike, they've been the most consistent team and the most impressive team, the most complete team in the country thus far this season.
Right. Well, going into the season, they looked like one of the most complete teams. It was just the freshman pitching that we were concerned about. And obviously, there's a little less concern right now with how Lang threw this weekend and how Godfrey's been for most of the year. He wasn't at his best on Sunday, but still a quality outing. Lang, I was watching the game, and he looked filthy.
I don't know how you want to classify that breaking ball, but that is a dirty breaking ball.
Yeah, it does have a little slurvy kind of slider type movement to it,
because it has that slider velocity with that almost like hard downer curveball action. So sometimes it really doesn't. Sometimes it's not helpful to try to decide whether it's a slider or a curveball. Sometimes it's just the breaking ball. And
it definitely breaks.
Yeah, it breaks, and it's the other thing that it has. It has action. Yeah. It's hard and it's late. And that's what defines a good breaking ball. Those are the things you're looking for, is that shape, that action, and that whether that action is late or early. He's got late, hard depth on it, and I think every pitching coach will tell you they'd rather see a breaking ball throw with power than not, and He doesn't have a problem throwing a breaking ball with power.
And the thing that stood out to me, too, about his outing is he mixed in his changeup quite a bit as well. He's got a few swings and misses on it as well. It's not going to be maybe a plus pitch, but still something that he can mix in.
It doesn't have to be. When the other two pitchers are so good, and if you're throwing strikes at the fastball and you have that breaking ball that's going to be in every hitter's head, it's going to be in every scouting report that when he gets ahead of you, he's going to look to go to that pitch. The changeup just has to be, really, the arm action is really the key there. As long as your arm speed's close enough on the changeup to your fastball, you're going to get a lot of hitters out front when you throw it like that. I guess the other question to me, guys, is their bats are starting to come around. I mean, Alex Bregman's starting to really get locked in. Some of that Albuquerque swagger starting to show for Alex Bregman. It's easier to have it when you're hitting, when you're going well, but it doesn't feel like there's a big hole in that lineup, guys. I mean, that's kind of what they are. So far, Jim, offensively, they kind of are who we thought they were.
Yeah, I think other than, I think when I saw them in Houston, I think their shortstop, Kramer Robertson's in like 200 or something in the ninth spot. But that's your one break. You better get him out when he's up there. But yeah, I mean, 1 through 8, I mean, I think for a while it was, Bregman was like the only guy under 300. And now he's starting to get hot. And even when he wasn't, I mean, Paul Maneri talked about it, he was hitting balls hard consistently. And I saw that in Houston. I mean, he was... I think even all the outs he made were hit hard, and now he's, I think he hit a home run or two this weekend, and I mean, the guys that, Connor Hales had a great start, and they've just got, Andrew Stevenson's obviously got brings a lot of speed at the top of the lineup, so I mean, it's a really dangerous lineup. They can beat you different ways. I mean, it's not just, this is kind of the big difference between them and what we've seen in the past, where it's not just, or maybe how you might think of LSU with the gorilla ball and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they run a lot now. Right. I don't say a lot. Maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but they run more than we're used to seeing from LSU. I mean,
it's aggressive. It's an aggressive. The mentality, you can tell that mentality that Paul Maneri talked about wanting Andy Cannizzaro to bring to their lineup. That mentality's there. They are. Right. And whether they're going to maintain that all year is remains to be seen. There's a lot of baseball yet to be played, but they do have an aggressive mentality on the bases. I thought it was very impressive in that Saturday night game how well Ole Miss handled them and kept them. It's not like LSU out-hit them in that game, but I was impressed with Ole Miss as well. I mean, we've seen Ole Miss, to their credit, they've been tested.
They've played a tough schedule, yeah.
They really have. Their 10-9 is not other teams' 10-9, but I don't know if you guys had impressions of Ole Miss from the weekend as well, watching them on SEC Network.
I mean, we've seen them be competitive. I mean, with, they played UCF on the road. They were competitive in that series. We've seen them, other than Sunday, obviously. But they, you say that competitive against LSU for two games. I mean, that's, they're probably putting themselves in a little bit of a hole as far as like being a host and whatnot. But they'll be there at the end, I think.
They'll be tougher for this experience of playing these weekend matchups, because they have played some tough series. And I mean, there is a lot of talent on the team. Sykes Orvis seemed like he was finally getting going this weekend, which is big for them. He had the big double in the 14th inning. They really needed his bat to get going in the lineup. Brady Bramlett's had been great for them. He wasn't quite Alex Lang good, but he at least kept up with him.
He was very consistent in that game. He threw a lot of strikes. When he missed down. I was impressed with Bramlett in that game as well. And to me, Ole Miss's athleticism kind of stands out. Not a lot of college teams with sophomores with the kind of athletic talent that Errol Robinson and J.B. Woodman have up the middle. And those are draft guys who came through high school and were fairly highly regarded on the showcase circuit. And I remember writing about those guys in high school. Then watching their progression, you can see the quality of the bats is getting there for Woodman. And for Errol Robinson, the guy just has really good hands. And I feel like they're secure and more athletic than most teams are going to be up the middle. So I'm with you guys. I'm impressed to a point with Ole Miss. At some point, the reason they're not in the rankings is 10-9 is 10-9. Looking for them to win a few more of those games. Vanderbilt's other SEC team up here. They're ranked 4th, and South Carolina's at 6. I think we'd all agree that Vanderbilt seems to be, after seeing them last week in Dodgertown, Mike, obviously they got Walker Buehler back at the end of the weekend. He throws well. That's a little shakeup and a little reshaping of their weekend rotation. And with that, they've really played well, and they kind of dominated Arkansas the last two games, at least on the mound.
Right. No, the biggest development with them is obviously getting Buehler back and then inserting Sheffield into that rotation as well. And he was excellent. He's been great for them out of the bullpen all year, but now getting a Sunday start, he kind of takes that rotation to another level if he continues to pitch that well. I like Vanderbilt. Obviously, we all like Vanderbilt a lot, and you look at LSU and they do look like a more complete team at this point, just what they can provide offensively top and down and with the way their freshman pitchers are pitching. But Vanderbilt's not far behind. They're right there. And, you know, with the way Rhett Wiseman is hitting, there aren't many hitters who are hotter than Rhett Wiseman right now. And Dansby Swanson is doing Dansby Swanson things. And you know, it's been, I'm not surprised to see them roll off 5 wins this week.
Dansby Swanson is doing Dansby Swanson things. And you kind of wonder when Brian Reynolds starts doing Brian Reynolds things, their offense is probably going to take another step forward. And
right.
I think I said this last week, the top five in their lineup is just, I would not want to go through that as a starting pitcher 4 times in a game. And I would not imagine that many pitchers would be able to do that 5 times in a game. Four times in a game. You're going to need your bullpen against Vanderbilt. They also provided one of the funner plays I saw on the weekend, the video of Roe Coleman's slide where he danced away from the Arkansas catcher. I didn't catch the catcher's name, but Roe Coleman's 5'2". You know, it's not easy to find him with a tag anytime, not to mention when he's trying to dance around the back of the plate. It was just a fun play to watch. And again, that this is a team that I almost wonder if LSU's professed desire to be more aggressive on the base pass is a direct result of Vanderbilt and seeing how effective their collective team speed and athleticism has been. One of the things I want to throw out is, Vanderbilt, I've talked about their turf a lot over the years, and I was talking to a cross-checker last week about just scouting all these college shortstops, the Richie Martins and the Bregmans and Kyle Holder, my latest obsession, the USD, Mikey White, et cetera, et cetera. So many of them are in the SEC. And he talked about how their team is not evaluating, really, Dansby Swanson when he plays at Vanderbilt. Not defensively, because of their turf. They want to evaluate him off their turf. So I just thought that was a little interesting little nugget that's thrown in. And to me, Vanderbilt just – I feel like it's hard to say whose ceiling is higher, Vanderbilt's or LSU's as a team. I happen to think it's probably LSU just because of the offensive firepower they have. But if Vanderbilt, they were pretty complete this weekend, coming from behind kind of when they, you know, Fulmer didn't pitch well necessarily on Friday and winning that game and then just really kind of putting the hammer down. It feels like they can have, in a week where they play 5 games, they're going to have 3 of those automatically that are where they give up 2 or fewer runs in those games. Their pitching is just too deep. I don't know, Jim, who do you think has the higher ceiling of those two teams, LSU, Vandy?
I will lean LSU on account of their you know, we'll see what Lang and Godfrey. You know, if they keep it up, what they're doing. I mean, I kind of like their lineup a little better coming into the year. I mean, obviously like Vanderbilt's too, but I think that was kind of, you know, with the ceiling of what those two guys have. You know, we'll see if they hit a wall at some point. That's kind of a thing to keep in mind with freshmen. But I mean, having seen the Tigers in person, I mean, they're really complete. They've got a lot of weapons in the bullpen, which, you know, I mean, they gave up a lead in the game they lost. Otherwise it's been a strength all season. It was really good in Houston. It was good, they locked down the game on Friday when Pochet had to come out in the 6th inning. And obviously Vanderbilt has pretty much a limitless amount of weapons on the mound, but I mean,
it sure seems that way.
I'll lean with towards the Tigers.
Mike, you got a pick there? Which one do you think has a higher ceiling?
In terms of ceiling, I think I might lean a little bit more toward LSU as well. I think Vanderbilt's the safer bet.
Yeah,
because of the experience all across the lineup and in the rotation as well. I mean,
call it Omaha swagger, but there is something all those college national team guys talked about it last summer.
Right.
Just the way that the Vanderbilt players were the cocks of the walk as soon as they showed up, basically, in Cary.
Right. And someone asked me in last week's chat, you know, who out of the Dodgertown teams do you think has the best chance of making it to Omaha? And I said Vanderbilt just, you know, because of that, because of the intangibles and the tangibles that they bring to the field. I think they are the safer bet at this point, but I think LSU, obviously they're our number one team. I think they do have a slightly higher ceiling just with all the talent they have.
I agree. One other team I do want to throw out, because I know one of our guys, it might have been one of you guys, who saw Missouri when they were here, and I actually have a friend in the area who's a Mizzou alum, and ran into him Saturday night, and he said, I saw Mizzou won again today. How about Missouri's 15-4? They sweep Georgia this weekend to open conference play, which is quite the setback for the Bulldogs. I kind of were hoping for that spring forward season here with Scott Strickland's second year. But the other thing with Missouri that stands out, I just went and looked at their schedule. They got swept by Milwaukee at home last weekend. So you're thinking that's quite the bounce back. Yeah, Tim Jamison's done a lot with this club over the years, but this is their first conference sweep since 2009 against Nebraska. Wow. That was in the Big 12, so both teams obviously split off there. But a big series sweep for Missouri, and that's the other thing that just goes to show to me the thing that stands out the most about the SEC is just the depth. Right. We say it every year, but if you're looking at how many teams are going to be regional hosts, and we have five SEC teams in our top six, are you going to have five top eight national seeds? Probably not. But are you going to have five regional hosts or top, 16 out of the 16 one seeds and hosts? Yeah, you probably are. And one of the reasons for that is there's no SEC killers, RPI killers in the SEC. Yeah. They just aren't. I mean, Tennessee's the only team that's even sniffing 500, them and Arkansas at 8-8, 9-8. So that really stands out. And that's, the Tennessee getting, Missouri getting swept at home by Milwaukee. That's going to be tough on their RPI, but that's the way you bounce back from that. And they're going to have a pretty gaudy record when it's all said and done. That's one of the other things that just sets the Southeastern Conference apart. And, again, South Carolina with a sweep this weekend as well. They're not toward the top of our rankings. One new team in our top 10 this week was Rice. And Rice has played that difficult schedule. They just kind of keep on keeping on. They open Conference USA play with a sweep. Team that fell out of our top 10 guys all the way down to 14. Well, two teams, I guess, 14 and 15, UVA and Oregon. I guess from my standpoint with Virginia, guys, it just felt like it was just inevitable, or hashtag inevitable, that Virginia was going to have a bump in the road because of the injuries, because of kind of the way that things have shaken out for them so far this year, where they're just so young. But that said, I was a little bit stunned that they're weak. They get housed at home by Old Dominion and then get swept by Virginia Tech. And there's no shame in losing to Sean Kiselik. He's a veteran two-way guy for the Hokies. Left-hander, can command it, pretty good pitch feel. So no shock necessarily there, but to get swept by the Hokies, that was a stunner. Yeah. I'm not sure what you guys, how concerned are you guys overall about UVA big picture-wise? This is really their first, this is their biggest test because you're on the road in conference, and they failed that test.
Right. I do have some concerns about the offense just because of how young it is. At times they start five freshmen in that starting lineup, and it hurts that they don't have Joe McCarthy for the first 12 weeks of the season. I think their mode right now is just kind of tread water until he gets back, try to, not...
That's really what they're doing. They're just trying to kind of hang on, really, right now, in some ways.
So, Paven Smith has been great for them. He's a freshman who's been fantastic for them. It looks like Adam Hazley is starting to pick things up a little bit. They really need his bat to get going. Obviously, he's a freshman, but he has the tools. They just need to lean on him a little bit. Ernie Clement got off to a hot start, but he's out of the leadoff spot now. They're really just looking up and down the lineup. They just really don't have that big threat, that big fearsome threat that you look for in a starting lineup, which, it's tough. They have the pitching. Nathan Kirby's been excellent this year. Connor Jones has been great this year. Waddell hasn't been far behind them, but it's just a matter if they're going to be able to score enough. You look at the three games they lost to Virginia Tech this weekend, 2-1, 3-1, 6-5, all games that were within reach, but they just couldn't score enough to put them away.
And it's amazing to me, you see this sometimes in basketball with the smaller rosters where they'll have like the walk-on to wind up getting more playing time or that kind of thing. But I did see this article before we were coming in here and just doing some research for the podcast about how they're auditioning club players for practice at Virginia. Mm-hmm. They're that banged up. They've had LaPrice banged up. It's not just LaPrice and McCarthy. That's two-thirds of your starting outfield and two guys you'd figure hit in the middle or top of your lineup, and they've had them for a combined four games this year. It's just they're not who we thought they were yet, Jim. Yeah. What's next, I guess, really, for this team? How do they get better off of these struggles? Is it really going to be a matter of just some of those freshmen offensively just kind of picking things up? Because I feel like they've pitched all right.
It's not an ideal time for Florida State to come to town, but...
right.
Yeah, obviously, it just feels like they're just... the pitching is doing its part. Kirby's being Kirby. Obviously, we talked about Connor Jones. That's a star on the rise. But, they're just relying on, just a handful of guys offensively. Matt Theis has been off to a great start. We talked about Paven Smith, but they're just not. We think we talked about what was it the Saturday game? They leave 11 men on base and lose. You only score one run. It's tough to string together many rallies. I mean, they've got a decent number of home runs, so maybe you get a solo home run to score a run, but that's all they're getting.
I think that this quote in this Andrew Ronsbacher story of the Daily Progress in Virginia and Charlottesville, they're very thin and they're very young. Mm-hmm. That's Virginia right now, so they're very talented as well. He left that part out. They are still very talented, but you lose a conference series on the road, you get swept, you're going to get hit in the rankings. Oregon did not get swept. They kind of jumped up the rankings quite a bit last week. We knocked the Ducks back a little bit this week, and I kind of like that Cal team. Weren't able to pull off the sweep, but Oregon winds up losing that series 2 out of 3 as well. You guys want to pivot off of the ACC or the Pac-12 a little bit off of those two, because we can go in either direction on this. Anybody got a choice? We probably should start with the ACC, because we talked a little bit about Florida State's going to Charlottesville next week. And Florida State, another strong week for the Seminoles. This team, just offensively, there were some offensive fireworks. Wake Forest, we actually had a Twitter question about it, mm-hmm. about Wake Forest. Those are two of the better offensive teams in the ACC. It was Dylan on Twitter, Dylan Finkst, I believe is his name, who wanted to know, chances Wake Forest keeps up this offensive explosion, or can they be consistent? I'll just go back to in the preseason questionnaire, Tom Walter said, this is the best offensive team I've ever coached. So he believes Wake Forest can keep this up. Will Craig seems like he believes he can keep it up because he's keeping it up. He's hitting .442 with 6 home runs. Can Florida State keep this up, guys? Because it seems like Florida State, they're staking their claim to be one of the best one of the ACC's best offensive teams. And obviously it's going to revolve around DJ Stewart and just how he performs and produces, but how he's pitched to and what it sets up for everyone else. But the pretty nice midweek sweep for them, and then to come back and win the series against Wake Forest. It feels like Florida State's been a little bit better than we thought they'd be, Mike.
Right, yeah. We were concerned about the depth that they had. They had a lot of key players leaving, but like you said, it all starts with DJ Stewart. He's tearing the cover off the ball right now. He has 6 home runs, .284, .505, .597 right now. And, you know, they do have a good veteran presence in that lineup. John Sansone has hit 4 home runs this year. And, you know, they outslugged a really powerful Central Florida team.
Yeah, that's a physical Florida team.
2 nights in a row, which tells you a lot. It tells you a lot about this team that they're able to outslug that group. And pitching-wise, they haven't been bad. Boomer Bogalski, I love that name. I'm going to say it every time I have the opportunity to.
Please make it so.
He's been very good for them. Mike Compton has done a nice job stepping into that Friday role. They need to find a consistent third guy. Kobe Johnson struggled here. He has the talent, but he struggled.
He has not been that guy. And you can see Mike Martin was fairly critical of him also in his post-game comments of just, you know, you need to come in ready to go from day one in practice and also pitch number one of a game. And, you know, he's having a little bit of trouble finding his rhythm in games the way Coach Martin talked about it. And once he does, he settles in, and he can be pretty good. He's shown, he's flashed the potential so far, but he's not where they need him to be yet. And but they do have depth out of the bullpen, as they always seem to have. They always seem to have multiple arms who can come out of there and locate breaking balls for strikes. That's just been a consistent staple of Florida State's programs over the years. And one of the guys they lost was their closer, in Jameis Winston, and they don't seem like they've skipped the beat there.
Billy Strode has been great for them this year.
He has. He's been outstanding. And, so Florida State, they did jump up our rankings all the way to number 13 ahead of the Cavaliers. And we dropped another team out of the rankings completely in North Carolina, which loses a series at Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and brought in Georgia Tech, Jim, who you've seen on a couple of occasions. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, Georgia Tech, it's not just Kel Johnson.
Nope.
That's a pretty consistent lineup. And they also found a weekend answer in Brandon Gold, a two-way guy for them.
He was really good yesterday afternoon. I mean, against – obviously Duke's not – you know, the best offensive team you'll face, but still, he was really good. He really mixed his pitches well. He was pitching to both sides of the plate. He was
got a good pitcher's body too.
He does. And they just kind of grinded out that win yesterday. And you know, on Friday they kind of, you know, they have to deal with Michael Mattiuella, but you know, he goes out of there after 4 innings. They're able to get it done against the Duke bullpen. You know, they're still kind of, you know, feels like they're still kind of piecing it together. Obviously, Cole Pitts did not have a very good outing on Saturday, so they're still kind of, you know, pitching is still the kind of thing we wonder about with them, so it still feels like they're kind of, might still be searching for answers in the rotation, but, I mean, we like the offense. I mean, obviously, Kel Johnson's kind of the the rising star, but I mean, Daniel Spingold is a veteran guy. We love Connor Justice a lot, even though he's had a slow start and he was hitting the nine hole this weekend. But
he's a glove first guy.
Yeah, he had a few hits though.
You're contrasting those two teams, for example, Georgia Tech and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
North Carolina's roster is deeper. They're definitely better on the mound. There's a gaping hole at shortstop, especially with Wood Myers injured, where Georgia Tech knows that when that ball's hit in that six hole, that play's getting made.
Mm-hmm.
Only North Carolina knows that. And I know I'm harping on their infield defense, but that team, I'll give the Carolina coaching staff credit in that nothing has gone according to plan for them at all on the base, on the diamond this year, whether it's scheduling, injuries, pitching staff, whatever. Nothing's gone according to plan for UNC this year, but a little stunned to see them out of the rankings. But, Mike, this doesn't feel like they've done enough to stay in the top 25. It's not a top 25 resume right now.
Right. No, I look at them, and I see a jigsaw puzzle that hasn't been put together yet.
Yeah.
And you keep getting pieces thrown out with Wood Myers out, Benton Moss, some concerns
right.
with his arm, and Riley Hovis out as well, and he wasn't pitching as well as we expected him to either.
Chris McHugh. I mean, you kind of looked at the right. back of their bullpen and said, wow, they've got this junior and senior, both of whom have closed, and those guys have combined to pitch, seven-plus innings and given up 14 runs.
Right, and there's really no consistency in the rotation either. A lot of movement there. Trent Thornton, moved from the closer's role, and now he's back into the rotation.
Right.
Zach Gallen did the same thing, moved from the bullpen, now he's back in the rotation. Really, their best arm has been J.B. Bukauskas, who's been stellar so far, as many predicted he would be. I mean, he has the stuff, but it's really just, I think for them, like you said, they do have the talent. It's a talented roster. It's just finding the right mix, especially in the infield. The infield defense is a big point of concern for them. With Wood Myers out now, it's going to be difficult to try to put together an infield defense that's going to be able to play well behind these pitchers.
It's a challenge for them, and kudos obviously to Pittsburgh, which was competitive in Chapel Hill last year, won one of those games. And North Carolina is 12-7, 3-3. It's just not a... It's not something we're used to seeing over the last few years. It's been a very consistent program in terms of getting to Omaha. What is it, 6 of the last 9 years? Mm-hmm. You usually give that coaching staff and that program the benefit of the doubt in recent years, but this year's team hasn't quite gotten it done. And then, like you said, just Georgia Tech's the team that has kind of jumped up into the rankings. Another one that kind of jumped out to me is Miami sweeping NC State, mm-hmm. NC State and Clemson. These two of these other programs have been very inconsistent. Clemson wins that series against South Carolina, so emotional. And they're 500. They lose a series to Notre Dame this weekend, which is off to a 3-3 start in the league. Obviously, it's a big weekend for Notre Dame in basketball, but a big weekend for Notre Dame in baseball as well. They're 14-4. I don't know what to think of Clemson or NC State, Jim. I mean, especially Clemson, 500
Clemson,
team.
That's very very mercurial so far. But I mean, like we were talking about during our meeting, they've played five series and won two of them.
Yeah,
where they
and one of them was South Carolina.
But we kind of went during the meeting. We had a debate about whether to move South Carolina above UCF, and the knock on them was that they lost to Clemson. I mean,
right.
But you lose at home to West Virginia, where they didn't hit at all in that series. Now you lose at home to Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame's been playing well, so it's not a horrible series loss. But also they're not running Pat Connaughton out there either. But
that's right. He's too busy running off
screens. He's hitting threes, but yeah, I mean, just it seems like their pitching is kind of, obviously their pitching just fell apart in that NC State series, and now this weekend, they won the first game, and then they just, you gotta finish the job at home. You gotta win that series. I mean, they've lost two home series now with West Virginia and Notre Dame. I mean, it's a very, I mean, you figure, I mean,
it's not,
you figure
not
they've got enough talent.
Resume.
Yeah, you figure they've got enough talent. There's a chance they can get it together if they can. If they can go 500 in the ACC, they'll probably get in because they've got to. Obviously, they do have a marquee non-conference series win, but I mean, it's hard to see them doing any damage the way they're currently constituted.
And it's a big weekend for Miami to have swept NC State. I guess the thing that stood out to me was they only gave up. They didn't give up many runs. NC State.
Getting Suarez back is big,
right?
Yeah, I mean,
getting Suarez back is huge.
Nar Hudson Belinsky actually was down. I didn't even realize he was in South Florida. I knew he was in Florida. I didn't realize it was Miami. So I think he
He's
just
everywhere.
Talked to Andrew Suarez. He is. That guy's everywhere. So
I don't know how he does it.
He doesn't sleep. I think that's a big part of it. You young whippersnappers with your lack of sleep surprises me and impresses me. I wanted to shift gears to the Pac-12 real quick. I'll tell you, two things stand out to me in the Pac-12. One was when we talked about SEC's depth. You know, too many teams with bad records in the Pac-12 either. One of them is Utah, and they go on the road and win a series at Arizona. And if Arizona winds up on the bubble, and Arizona's a team that's really hitting, again, top of the lineup with Kingery and Dahlbeck and, of course, Kevin Newman.
It's a dangerous lineup.
It's a very dangerous lineup, and they get 16 hits in the Saturday game against Utah. But they put Dahlbeck on the mound on Saturday, and he gave up 7 runs. And they gave up 9 runs to Utah the last 2 innings. They're winning 7-0, blow that game, and then they wind up losing the series. That's one that if we go to the end of the year and we're debating how many Pac-12 teams need to get in, and if Arizona doesn't get in, that's the one they're going to point to, is losing a home series to a Utah team that's, you just expect it when you look at it geographically, historically. Utah, I like Bill Kinneberg, it does a nice job there, but usually Utah's not one of the top-tier teams now that it's new to the Pac-12, and that's going to be one that Arizona might really rue the day that they did not win that series. And the other big news out of the Pac-12, I guess, is Stanford, which is a 500 team as well, record-wise, losing their Friday starter, Cal Quantrill. He hasn't pitched this month. Now the reports of Jeff Blair, he's Canadian, Quantrill is, so the Canadian press, of course, breaks this first. Jeff Blair, our former longtime Montreal Expos correspondent. Now he's like a radio guy, works for Sportsnet, baseball guy in Canada. I just love that he's transitioned from the Ice Expo to the Blue Jays. But Jeff broke that news, and we've got it confirmed from a lot of scouts that Tommy John surgery coming for Cal Quantrill. I don't see Stanford recovering from that. It's just not a program that has the pitching depth to recover from that. I don't feel like we know a whole lot about who the best team in the Pac-12 is, guys. Right now, our highest-ranked team remains the Trojans after what they did at Dodgertown. And USC grinds out a series win this weekend. What's impressed you about these guys, about the Trojans, that you saw them last week, Mike? And kind of what's made USC a top-10 team to this point? This is a team that hasn't been to regionals in a decade.
Right.
What are they doing right?
Right. Well, I like the veteran presence in their lineup. Dante Flores looks like things are really coming together for him. He's their second baseman.
He's blooming, blossoming.
He's blooming, as Vince Lara punned on Twitter. Bilingual pun.
That's right. It was bilingual. I like that.
Yeah,
he's got 3 names, so of course he would be able to
exactly.
Bilingual punning.
That's exactly right for Vince.
Yeah, so he's been blossoming for them. I really like Bobby Stahel at the top of the lineup, really athletic guy, and he's been an igniter for them, and plus the rotation has been with Brent Wheatley. He's pitched very well. Kyle Toomey, the last couple starts, has been a little iffy, but Mitch Hart has been great as a freshman. He had a no-hitter working through 5 innings yesterday against Washington State. He's a guy who's going to pound the zone 90-92. Coach Dan Hubbs said that he wanted him to finish off hitters a little bit better. He's had a hard time putting hitters away once he gets 2 strikes. Had 5 strikeouts yesterday, not great in 9 innings, but still a little better. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he pitched 9 innings, he allowed only 2 hits, he gave up no runs. I mean, he's a guy who has really held down that Sunday spot for him, and as well as having a veteran lineup and a group that has a little swagger, that has a little confidence coming off of last year. You know, I like USC. I think on paper, UCLA might have a little more talent, but USC's definitely played better of the two in recent weeks.
And it really feels like, you mentioned their pitching. It seems like Matt Curtis, pitching coach there in his second year, was at Fresno State when Fresno State won us a national championship in 2008, was head coach at Cal State Northridge for a couple years. It feels like he's developed some depth there. They've got some bullpen depth. They don't have just the one guy they have to go to.
Right.
And it feels like there is, you mentioned Wheatley, Hart, obviously Toomey was a high draft. This feels like a rotation that it's capable of keeping this going all year. This doesn't feel like it's a fluke. And we had them as a regional team coming into the year, Jim, but we weren't necessarily sure just what the ceiling was. It's kind of hard to go out on that limb when a team hasn't gone to Omaha I haven't gone to regionals for a decade. But this does feel like a different USC team. And they're doing it on the field. I guess that's the other part of this, is you kind of have to give them their credit to keep on winning and figure out a way to win that series. Washington State came up with you had that Sunday game that kind of decides the weekend series. Pretty emphatic win.
Going away, yeah.
Yeah, pretty emphatic win there for the Trojans. The other Pac-12 teams that we've had in here, we mentioned UCLA. I feel like we talked a lot about Arizona State this year. I feel like coming into the year, we knew they're going to hang their hat on. You figured this weekend rotation with Lillard coming back and Kellogg and some of the veteran presence there. But this just feels like the buzz on this Arizona State team is pretty strong. They haven't had an emphatic weekend yet where they've gone out there and just dominated people. But this feels like just a more aggressive program and team all the way around.
Yeah, it just feels like there's a lot of, you know, from everything you kind of read coming out of there, it just sounds like there's so many positive vibes with the, you know, the energy in the fan base with the new park and with Tracy Smith coming in there and what they've been able to do so far. I mean, you know, they obviously Lilac and Kellogg are kind of the guys that everyone knows and they've been throwing pretty well. But you know, Colby Woodmansey was a, you know, physical guy at shortstop that we, you know, thought he kind of struggled as a freshman last year, but we thought he might have a breakout year, and so he's been really good so far. And they've got it's just a veteran lineup, and they've got a lot of guys that can hit up and down the line and up and down that lineup there. And you know, they've kind of been, you know, they start the season with a, you know, series win against Oklahoma State, which at the time we had ranked very high. They've kind of struggled. They've gotten a little bit better, but they kind of struggled a bit early in the year. But they very competitive with TCU, and beating Oregon State's obviously I'm gonna have a item on KJ Harrison for three strikes, but Oregon State's got a lot of young talent. They're probably not ready to go on the road and win a series like that yet, but that's a good team.
Give them a month. It seems like that's going to be a very dangerous team. Pac-12 season.
Yeah, by the end of the year, that'll be a dangerous team. Obviously, Andrew Moore was outstanding on Friday. So that's a good series. That's a really good series win to start conference play. And Sun Devils. I mean, we've kind of had them. They've just kind of been hovering in that 16-18 range all year. I mean, it's kind of seems like when they win, all the teams ahead of them win. Or you know, we just kind of really had an opportunity to really give them a big bump. But that's a team that, you know, was going to be in the mix for hosting and national seeds and all that stuff. I mean, that's a deep, well-rounded team.
The thing that stands out to me, Mike, also is that just they said that they're never done in any of these games, and there's a lot of late game drama. Ryan Burr's got 7 saves for them, and he's got a reputation, but he's not necessarily automatic. He's the kind of closer where he's just got that shotgun command where every once in a while he's going to make it a little shakier than he probably needs to, but he eventually usually gets the job done. And they came from behind on both their wins this weekend. That seems to be like where that vibe comes from, that this is a team that's really going to they're going to keep things interesting, because they might be losing 7-4. They're not going to give up in the bottom of the ninth, 2 outs in those situations. And if they're up 7-4, Burr's liable to walk 2 guys and then strike out the next 3.
Yeah. Which is what he did in the last game.
Is that literally what he did?
Well, he walked the first batter, then he struck out the next 2, and then it was a line drive to end the game. So, but he pitched in all 3 games.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a bulldog.
Yeah.
I like the grittiness to the team. They haven't had a clean weekend per se, but they've also faced some tough competition so far, and they've held their own against that competition. And like you said, I mean, they're a team that you never think they're out of the game. You always think they're going to have a rally in them. And that's, you know, you can't really point to any statistic for that, but it's a quality that they have. I think they're a team to watch for in the Pac-12.
Yeah, and as Jim and I both believe, I think, you know, Oregon State 15-5, they could be ranked 2. We've got a lot of, you know, this.
If they'd won that series, we would have pushed for them.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And that's, you know, there's a lot going on in this with some of these teams in this league. I like the depth of the Pac-12. You really would like to see one of these years where the Pac-12 gets 7, 8, 9 teams out of its 10, I guess, what is it, 10 or 11 baseball members that play.
Yeah.
I guess it's
no Colorado and no is that the only one?
I think it's just Colorado.
Yeah.
I'm so college expansion. I really have a hard time with it. They have 11 teams. So it's just Colorado, but I have a hard time remembering where all the teams are. Frankly, Florida Atlantic is one program I cannot figure out where they are from week to week. And I went to high school down there. I mean, I know that program very well, but I'm always one league behind with Florida Atlantic. When they were in the Transamerica, then it changed its name to the Atlantic Sun, and then they moved to Sun Belt, and now they're in Conference USA. I think they might have been in Conference USA, then Sun Belt, and back to Conference USA. Honestly, like I can't keep track of some of those guys. That's the last thing we should talk about, guys. We did bring in Indiana. We debated bringing in Florida Atlantic. We debated bringing in Tulane. Not that long on Tulane, frankly. Their resumes, they won a lot of games. Not a huge resume. We debated bringing in Maryland again, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, Nevada, San Diego. We just talked about Oregon State. The back of the rankings, I guess, Mike, for me, are pretty soft. I mean, there's really, like, we had a lot of agreement basically through like number 17, 18, 19, and then we were kind of scattered after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the one team that I do really like after seeing them out in California is San Diego, but they're 10-7. That's right. Not, you know, if they started off 2-6 against Morehead State, and, you know, it's just not, you know, they need to play a little bit better than that. But they have been on an impressive run.
Yeah. They have played better. They got that bad start, and they have started to play better.
They've gotten on an impressive run, and they do have talent on the team. It's more of a pitching defense team than an offensive team than they have been in past years. Bringing in the Hill brothers has been big for them pitching wise. They've both been good, one in the rotation and one in the bullpen.
So. USD likes guys named Hill. They've been all right with that. They've had some success with that. I'm not sure that's what Ridge Hill looks for in a pitcher, is a guy named Hill. But those two have been very effective for them. That was nice. And again, this team, there's athleticism out there on that ball club. That seems to be what stands out for them.
Starting with Kyle Holder at shortstop, right,
John? I wasn't even going to say it, but yeah, Kyle Holder. I mean, I feel like Kyle Holder, I feel like he needs to be my backup point guard out there. I want him to play with, I want him feeding my kid. My kid had 12 points this weekend.
Okay.
Very excited. I'm surprised I didn't vine that it's a step back jump shot that he drained this weekend in his game.
I would have revined it.
My vine game needs to be stepped up a few notches, guys. Several notches. One thing I want to touch on before we go, we've got UC Santa Barbara. We're talking about teams out west. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Indiana. Jimmy, you can talk about the flip side, which is Indiana sweeping, and they're really doing this. We had a Twitter question about it. What's the staying power for this team? It was Burt Granger who wanted to ask, Indiana's impressive run without Scott Efros, and then we could also touch on Brendan McKay replacing Anthony Kitson in the Louisville rotation. That's really just a matter of Brendan McKay just being lights out, ridiculously good, making his case for freshman of the year. You know, take that, Kel Johnson, kind of. He's just been outstanding offense. On the mound, in the lineup, Brandon McKay just been outstanding for Louisville. But more first, Jim, Indiana's impressive run. I mean, they lost last year's cover boys, Schwarber and Travis, and they just rolled right along with Chris Lemonis, a big sweep of previously ranked Cal State Fullertons. We have two Big Ten teams at the back of the rankings. And the flip side of that, maybe, Mike, you can touch on after Jim talks about the Hoosiers. What's going on in the Big West? The Big West is very topsy-turvy. Only Santa Barbara really has kind of lived up the expectations. But, Jim, just starting the Big Ten, I mean, Indiana, Illinois, we like Nebraska, who you saw last week. And this, we thought this league was going to be very competitive this year, and so far so good for the Big Ten.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, with Indiana, I mean, obviously they lose their coach. They lose all the, the stars from last year. They lose Joey Donato from the top of the rotation. He was veteran guy.
We just got done talking about Tracy Smith and how much we like him. That's a big hole to replace, too.
Exactly. I mean, it's... Efros, obviously, they've kind of been without him. And, you know, Christian Morris, another guy who was a holdover, has kind of struggled a little bit. So, I mean, they've kind of had to piece it together, it feels like. But, I mean, look at – they do have some holdovers, I mean, from last year. I mean, Scott Donnelly's been there. Casey Rodriguez been there. Brad Hartong. Those are guys that have kind of been around. But they've kind of had to, find their identity offensively. I mean, they're not going to be the power team that they were before. But, I mean – Sowers is a guy that, had some big hits this weekend. He's a guy they like, a freshman.
I like Logan Sowers.
Yeah, Logan Sowers.
There's physicality there. I think I was a little high on him at the draft last year, but this is a guy, he does have physicality and just some offensive ability. I'm not surprised that he's been able to step in from day one as a freshman and contribute there.
I mean, it's got Donnelly, one of the guys I'm talking, he's a good pure hitter. Red Hartong's, pretty athletic and, got some good veteran leadership there. So I mean that's a and when you look what they, I mean they got 10 hits off of Thomas Eshelman. I mean he probably hasn't given up 10 hits all season. But I mean and then so they kind of outlast Fullerton in that game, win it in extra innings, and then they they scratch out a win against Justin Garza and on the second game of that doubleheader, and then they so they kind of had to come from behind on Sunday to finish the sweep. But they do that and they end up pulling away in that game. So I mean that's a. I mean, obviously, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about Fullerton and here in a minute, but I mean, that's kind of a they're their own story. But I mean, that is impressive to sweep Fullerton on top of beating Stanford week one when Stanford had Cal Quantrill, on the road, no less. So I mean, that's I think as I kind of wrote about in Tracker, Indiana's only had one non-winning weekend. I mean, they've been for all they've had to replace and reorganize, reshuffle, what have you. They've been really consistently good all season.
They have been consistent, and they've moved Jake Kelzer into the weekend rotation. This is a guy who kind of, I wouldn't say he was a pop-up necessarily, he was a sophomore eligible last year, right before the draft, had some reports of him popping mid-90s velocity with a real hard slider, and he didn't even pitch well in the finale there, and they were able to overcome that. So this is a team that it feels like Chris Lemonis has got a – I mean, obviously he inherited some talent, mm-hmm. inherited some guys who've been through winning, like you mentioned, some of their veteran guys like Casey Rodrigue, where they know how to win games, but knowing how to do it and then doing it against consistent competition, mm-hmm. Those are two different things. I also want to give Indiana some props. Pretty good attendance this weekend again. Yeah, just look through their boxes.
You see kind of the tweets they're sending out and everything. You can tell the buzz has not left with
right.
It did not walk out the door with Schwarber and Travis and all those guys.
So just very impressed with Indiana. The series win for Illinois again this weekend to stay in our rankings. Just feel like the Big Ten really does have a chance to send quite a few teams to regionals. But, Mike, I don't know about the Big West because it is hard to overcome losing records. You had Irvine go to Omaha last year. They're 8-10, and that's what they've rallied to get to 8-10. Riverside's under 500. Fullerton's at 500. Mm-hmm. Cal Poly, we know the injuries they've had to deal with, and Mark Mathias is back now, but Cal Poly's 6-11. Hawaii's got a bad record. Jim, you saw them last weekend. They were the least talented team in mm-hmm. Houston, right?
I mean,
that's not
a stretch. That's fair to say. They're young,
it's
but
a good
they
field.
Were, yeah, that's. I mean, yeah, you can't get around that.
But I mean, really, Northridge has been really the only kind of pleasant surprise in the entire Big West. I know. Talk a little bit, Mike, about what you saw. I can't believe I just did a talk about, but I just did it.
Hashtag talk about.
I did hashtag talk about.
That's not a question, John.
It's not a question. Here's a question. Why did Rick Vanderhook kind of Johnny Holstaff it and kind of he was basically auditioning on Tuesday in that midweek gaming as USD you saw. What answers are you still looking for? And I guess he didn't really get any answers in Bloomington this weekend.
Yeah, it was a bit odd. He said he was looking to see who would make the bus to Indiana. And basically he threw out 8 pitchers in that game and a few freshman guys in the lineup. And a couple of them, Tanner Bice hit a home run, his first career home run and his third career at bat. So that was nice for them. But he said his team was really just playing to try to impress him and not necessarily playing for each other. But then again, when you create that kind of environment where it's basically a tryout, I mean,
right.
I would kind of think that they would play to impress him. It was kind of odd, you know, because they were coming off a good weekend. They just got in their top 25, and then all of a sudden, you know, the lineup that he throws out there is, you know, they don't have an opposing lineup to begin with. And then when you're mixing in some of the younger guys, it's, you know, you're kind of begging to lose that one to a hot San Diego team.
So, and they did.
And they did. San Diego called him on it. And so it was a little strange to see. I mean, the thing about Cal State Fullerton is obviously as long as they have Eshelman and Garza, they're going to be in Friday and Saturday's games. It's just
right.
a matter of if they're going to be able to hit enough. And so far, you know, they really haven't. You know, they have half the time.
Right. But, they really haven't, though. And in general, it's kind of been a letdown.
Yeah,
I'm just looking through. I mean, it's early. We're what, 5 weeks in,
yeah.
5 weekends mm-hmm. in, and you're. But I'm looking at like the Warren Nolan RPI. You know, Big West teams are mm-hmm. kind of far down there, and they usually are. But I mean, it's going to be difficult, I think, for some of these guys. You know, it's like not like Northridge just played real strong competition. This feels like this might be a two bid league, guys. I mean,
Other than Santa Barbara, I mean, it's. I don't know. If there's. I mean, you figure Fullerton will. Figure out enough to get in, but it's...
I think so. They did last year.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, other than that, I mean, it's there's no one you can say, oh, yeah, that team's, you can, you know, that team's going to be there.
It's hashtag unimpressive right now. I mean, I'm not, it's early, but you just look at the way things have gone for the Big West historically. I feel like they're usually underrepresented by a team or two in the 64-team field. Well, I guess Long Beach is their team that you kind of think could be there. But, you know, they're sitting at 107 right now on the RPI. I mean, it's way too early to be talking RPI in some ways. But I think it does tell you, to an extent, what they've done so far and how that's going to, you know, this is what the committee is going to be looking at. And the fact they beat Michigan and they played Utah Valley and this kind of thing, that's not helping, you know, necessarily when it goes long term. So they play Fullerton this weekend in a non-conference series, Long Beach State. The team that wins that series, I'm just looking at it right now, the team that wins that series has the inside track for being that second team, especially if they can finish well in conference play. Then they play at the end of the year in Fullerton, the last weekend series. So Long Beach, also just looking at their schedule, they've also got to go to Indiana later on this year. So that'll be a common opponent. So they're looking for that. They're looking for the Big Ten to. They're looking for that Big Ten bump.
And we've already got a common opponent with them in Stanford. I mean, the Titans lost to Stanford.
Right. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm just looking at the Big Ten. You know, it has the same number of teams, basically the same kind of ratio of teams that are way under 500. The problem with the Big Ten is, you know, the Rutgers, the Northwesterns, the Penn State with some of these really ugly records that might drag down the non-conference, might drag down that conference RPI. But so three or four teams, whatever it's going to wind up being out of the Big Ten, I think it's safe to say the Big Ten's probably going to get more teams. I know they have more teams. They're going to get more teams to the NCAA tournament, I bet, in the Big West. And that doesn't feel like that computes. You know, it doesn't feel like that's necessarily right, but it feels like that's where we're trending, guys. And part of that, I mean, Indiana, I think, is trying to wreak its own havoc that way. This is a fun podcast. The more I get into it, the more I enjoy talking college baseball. And it's great to actually go see a game here locally, and the sun's out. I think I'm going to see a few games this week. Mm-hmm. So it's good to actually see teams in league play as well. And the SEC, we'll have to research that one. I don't think we've ever had five teams in the top six, guys.
I can't believe we ever have.
So we'll see how long that can hold up. So good stuff, guys. So for Jim Schroeder and Mike Lanana, I'm John Manuel. Brought to you by Louisville Slugger. Visit them at Slugger Nation on Twitter or on Instagram. Visit us at both of those, at Baseball America, Twitter and Instagram. And if you're not already following, he's at Jim Schroeder, BA. He's at M. Lanana, LANANNA.
Yes.
Got that right? I think I've committed that to memory, which is a good thing because I was struggling with it earlier. At least I didn't put you in the system wrong like I've done with many interns in the past.
Like Chris Colazzo?
Chris Colazzo and Jacob Emmert with two M's last summer. I had two interns. You had one job. I messed up the job on both counts. So for those guys, I'm John Manuel, at John Manuel BA. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.